find them somewhere. We are just waiting for one of the members of the Portuguese Parliament to arrive. She will make a speech, an introduction. She has been one of our biggest supporters, and I'm sure she will love to meet you all. But first, a few words from the organizing team. So, hi everyone. If you haven't not met me yesterday, I'm Claudia. I'm the Director General of this conference. I'm so happy to finally have you in this room. We came here so many times to prepare everything. We envisioned how you'd be seated and how you'd be taking pictures of this amazing, gorgeous room. And it is finally a pleasure to have you all here. MU Lisbon has been in the making for about a year and a half when a group of Portuguese people went to MU Strasbourg, that many of you might have attended as well. And that inspired us to create Vita Portugal, and now we have this amazing MEU. So for this entire week, we will be here in the Parliament. This is the Senate room, and then we have another room for the Council, which you might see as well. You have all the indications. So regarding my own personal views, I'm so happy to have you. Literally, this has been, for me personally, a lot of work. A lot of phone calls and a lot of emails. Literally, the first email we've sent is today making a year. It was precisely to get this parliament, and it has been an amazing work. I'm so proud of my team. I would like to introduce you to some of them. So, first of all, you have here on my right Miguel, which is your participants coordinator. He has been reading your essays, grading them, and giving you all your roles and answering all your questions. To my left, you have my lovely Deputy Director General, André, which has been so much help in keeping me grounded and keeping me not crying. So that has been tremendous. And then, of course, we wouldn't be here with one of the persons that has inspired us the most, Claudio, the President of Vita Europe. We shall also make a few words here in this session. So, first of all, I just like to say, have fun. Okay, this is the place where you can make mistakes, where you can get out of yourself. Just break every rule, not in the Parliament. Okay, not here. Break every rule that you have for yourself. The way you behave, the way you talk. Move away from that. You have your own roles. You're simulating someone else. So you are free now of your own inhibitions and fears. And this is precisely a platform for you to grow, to innovate, and to experiment with new techniques and new interesting things and learn. So just have fun. Enjoy the city. Anything you need, come up to me anytime. Thank you.
Well, I guess it's my turn to say some words. I think I'm good at words, so I think it will work out fine. To be fair, I've already organized my share of events, and none of them posed such a challenge as this one. The time frame we had, the fact that we were new, we had a completely experienced but not acquainted with the MEUs at all, or most of them weren't acquainted. And in joining this team and actually helping Claudia manage it all and be here, it's something that really actually matters a lot to me. You wouldn't believe the time we all the team, and even not just the ones that are here, but the ones that actually worked a lot and aren't here. We have plenty of them, just to make this happen. And just the simple fact of being here at the Senate room of our parliament, I mean, it's very, I think it's a high moment of, in comparing to all other events I've ever organized, it's a very high, it's the highest of the highest. And I would like to thank you all for actually making this possible, because if it wasn't for the participants, we wouldn't be here at all. And no matter how many problems we'll have to solve, no matter how many sleepless nights we'll still have to go through in order for you to have the best experience, you can count on us. You can count on every team, on Claudia, on Miguel, and every other team member, every other volunteer that is here working completely pro bono, and hope you really enjoy. The fact, you know, just one little last remark. When I was in the General Assembly, when my name was proposed to be Deputy Director General, I kind of hesitated for a little bit because I knew how hard it would be. I knew the challenges that we would face would be extremely dire, to say the least. But then, you know, to the ones that know me, and I'm a staunch Federalist, European Federalist, I felt like the MEUs are the best tool to actually promote such vision of Europe, even for the more Eurosceptic, because at least the debate after an MEU gets centered on the right metrics, meaning everyone lives here knowing a little bit more on how the EU works. So the regular arguments against, you know, more European integration get dimmed down and become irrelevant. But to wrap it up, and because I don't want to take your time, I want to thank especially Claudia for setting this up. She had the initial idea. She pushed us to the limit, and she was the most insistent of them all. And if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't be here at all. So this must really be appreciated. And I really do hope you enjoy. We still have a lot of surprises for you. We hope you enjoy them. I won't tell them. I mean, that would be dumb. But I hope you really enjoy all the surprises, you enjoy your time here, you enjoy the conference, and I hope when you go back to your countries or back to your cities in Portugal, or if you're from Lisbon, if you stay here, I hope you keep only the best memories you can ever have, and that will be our reward for our hard work here. Thank you.
Thank you. Dear participants, it is, after all of this, it's a great honor and a great pleasure for me to welcome you all here to the House of Democracy in Portugal. I don't know if it's noticeable that we're quite proud of our venue. because it's really, really good to have you all here. Organizing this event was a great challenge, and for that we had the amazing team that you've already met and you will keep on meeting in the rest of the days. I'm sure these days will be a mark in your lives. It will be a great experience. We have a fantastic group of participants, and I'm hopeful that you will leave Lisbon with a lot of new friends, a much broader knowledge of the rest of Europe in terms of culture, in terms of political knowledge, but also with a will and a strength and motivation to make the difference in whatever area you decide to, because you are all very capable of it. As a treasurer, I would like to thank you all for the readiness in paying the registration fees. I now have a flight to the Caymans to catch. I'm very sorry, I might have to leave. No, seriously. It was a great challenge, but I'm quite happy to welcome you all here. Selecting all of the participants here was demanding. The quality level was very, very high. And knowing all of you, your ambitions, and determining what place best suits you was a demanding task and very challenging. I'm confident you will find some discomfort in your positions. That discomfort is intentional, and it shall drive you to a better understanding and tolerance of the diversity that the European citizenship encompasses. I can confess to you that after so many emails and texts and calls, Yesterday, when I saw so many of you talking and having fun, I was filled with a certainty. We're going to have a remarkable week, and you are a fantastic group. Enjoy.
Well, what could I add after this? Definitely that I wish this was actually accurate, real life wise, you know. I wish I could be here as President of the European Parliament to open the MEU Lisbon 2018. But no, it is in another condition which I take gladly to be here, not just as another member that helped putting this together, but as President of BETA Europe. And for me, it is especially heartwarming that as I approach what is now the end of a very hard year of work of the Bringing Europeans Together Association, to stand here on native soil and be able to say to you all, bem-vindos a Lisboa. It is really an amazing opportunity and an amazing accomplishment what this team has done. And I want to thank you all for making this possible. Since I've returned from Brussels, I've been following very closely what has been going on here. And it hasn't been easy what this very small but motivated group of people has achieved. Every time people approach BETA Europe and ask us how to start our own BETA branch, how to start our own MEU conference, and they go through the same difficulties that you have gone through. Now, after so many successful stories, but for me especially, after this one, I could not say with greater confidence, if you are planning on starting your own MEU conference, if you are planning on starting your own BETA branch, look at this experience today to see how far you can go and how much you can achieve. That is the power of youth when motivated to do things they feel it's right. That is the power of us all, of each and every one of us, when we get our hands dirty and get the job done. What do we accomplish? Fun. That's what you're going to do this week. You're going to have fun. You're going to make friends for life. You're going to meet the love of your life twice. True story. Sad, very sad, but always the same joke, but accurate. But you will. You will have drinks, lots of drinks. Tryon is in the room, so Tryon is the expert over there, so report to the drinking coordinator. After 2 a.m. only, of course. CET time, of course. And you will learn far more than you could have ever learned inside a classroom. You will have fun and learn at the same time without even realizing it. And that is the greatest achievement these events can provide. So to all of you, I want you to know that this conference is about you. An MEU is about the participants. It's all made and arranged for you. Have fun. Enjoy. Make the most of it. Because the more you put into this conference, the more you'll get out of it. And the better you'll feel at the end of the day, and the more friends you'll have at the end of the day, and the more what you have learned at the end of the day. And you'll leave with an amazing experience. And when you go through this process, which is going to be the MEU hangover after this week, and you think you just can't get enough, you want more, because believe me, you will. And some of you have. That's why you're here again and again and again. Then you reach out to us, because that's what we do. The Bringing Europeans Together Association is here to help you expand our network and from a small group of 9 people in Mainz 10 years ago, we are now present in 13 countries with 13 BETA branches. We are now present in another 21 countries with 21 partner organizations. And we have an network that goes from Lisbon to Kiev, and we'll organize MEUs everywhere from Egypt to Lebanon, soon to Kazakhstan. This is what you can do. And I invite you all to put your city on the map, to put your country on the BETA map, and to keep expanding this amazing experience and bring it to more and more people across Europe, across the world, and bringing people into the process. Because The clue's in the name. Bringing people together. That's what we do, and that's what I hope you can all help us to achieve. Enjoy this week, guys. Thank you.
Okay, so I now have the pleasure of introducing to you Margarida Marx, a member of the Portuguese Parliament and former Secretary of State of European Affairs. She has been a supporter of this project since the early beginning, since our first MEU in our own national language. She has been present there, she has seen the sessions, she knows how this works, and so we are so, so happy to include her once again in this process, especially here in her place of work, in her home, in our home. So welcome once again, and thank you for coming.
Good morning, everybody. I was in my office. I thought that it was 10 and not half past nine. It's why I arrived just now. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Beta Portugal to organize this meeting to debate Europe and to work as you are active actors in the European Union. It means as you are members of the institutions or as you work with institutions. I'm here on my own, not representing the National Parliament, but I'd like to welcome you in this room, in the Senate room, in that house, the House of Democracy, the House of Democracy in Portugal. And it's the best place to organize this meeting, not only because it's a very nice room, but also because it's a House of Democracy. In the end of the day, it's what we want is work in democratic societies, live in democratic societies, and work in democratic societies. It's a good moment to have this meeting. It's why I congratulate Beta Portugal, but I know that you have meetings, this type of meetings all around Europe, but we are after holidays, and in 8 months, we will have European elections. And I think for your organization, for you, it's a very challenging period of time since now until May next year. For Portugal, until 26th of May next year, when the European elections will take place in Portugal. Why is important the European elections? It's something that is in the public speech, that young people, youth people, don't participate, don't vote, don't have political ambitions. It's not true. This is my point. It's not true. But when I look to the results, to the turnout of the last elections, yes, I'm worried about the next turnout, not only for young people, but to everybody. When I look to the figures in Portugal, when I look to the turnout in Portugal on last elections, I'm worried about the next European elections. It's why I congratulate you, and I think that it's very challenging for you, for all of you, because we, not you, but we need to work hard to have good participation on next European elections, but also good results. When I say good results, you can think, okay, you are from the Socialist Party, you want that SED will be the winner next elections. This was very good, but I'm quite sure about the political situation in Europe. And I think that our first ambition must be democracy. This is the first ambition. Democracy, liberty, free on press, on media, free to have the capacity to attend a school, and so on and so far. So I have 2 points concerning European elections. First one, youth participation. Second one, new spectrum in the future European, in the next European Parliament. Considering youth participation, as I had said, it's a challenge. We need to work hard until May. But this means that we can't only say you need to vote when we are in a school, when we are discussing with your friends in a pub or a cafe or a cinema. It's not enough to say you need to vote. It's not enough to explain that it's important to vote. We need to have concrete proposals. When I think about the past, I think about youth guarantee. It was a small program, but it was an important program in different countries, including Portugal during the crisis. Or I think about Erasmus Plus. It's very good that Erasmus is no more only for higher education, but also for training, for secondary, low secondary education, and so on. So it's important that Erasmus is open to other group of young people and not only for higher education. Because Erasmus is a very good program, and I imagine the biggest part of you had the opportunity to do Erasmus. The problem is that Erasmus is still elitist. Why? Because the money you receive, the fee you receive, is not enough to go 6 months to study to another country. And it's not to everybody. It's only 10%, 20% of the students in one faculty who can participate in, who can be beneficiaries of Erasmus. So it means it's important that the Commission is proposing now for the next MFF after 2020 to double the budget for Erasmus program, but it's not enough. Member states need to do more to spread Erasmus and to create conditions to more young people participate in Erasmus program. This is one point. But we need also to think about the future, because in the end of the day, when we are speaking about European elections, it means we are speaking about the new European Parliament from 2019 until 2023. So it's for the future, it's not for the past. It's why political parties need to have concrete programs for young people. For example, Socialist Party will launch a youth plan for European elections. Plan integrating new conditions for jobs, for training, for education, for culture, for mobility in Europe, and also for concrete areas with which Europe is confronted. For example, I think about innovation and higher education. Europe needs to be stronger and create new conditions to promote innovative projects and to promote European innovation, organizing networks between universities, among universities and research centers. This is very important, but it's also important to create conditions to transfer the innovation from the university to the economy and to the society. Because we know that in Europe we have a lot of innovations, but in the end of the day we don't have yet capacity to integrate innovations in economy and in societies. It means to transform innovation in economic value, to transfer innovation to create new jobs. And this is a very challenging issue. But also digital. Digital is the day-by-day of our societies. We deal with digital since we wake up until we go to sleep. The problem is that in a digital society, or the challenge is in a digital society, I think about, for example, social rights. And when you think about digital platforms, like Uber or other digital platforms, they are interesting. They can contribute to the economy. Okay, but where the social rights are? This is our challenge. I want to know. I know that with a digital platform, I have a different work relation. But I need to maintain my rights on and social security, to have a pension when I will be an old man or an old woman. I need to have a minimum of security in my job. It's why we need to discuss how the social rights are used, how can I be beneficiary of the social rights in a digital society, including in digital platforms. But also, we have, European Union have other challenges, like climate, like peace in the world, like development, like to fight against isolationism. When we look what are you living in the world, after the new Trump administration, a new strong, it was already, but it became stronger, the fight against isolationism. It means we need to negotiate, we need to work with third countries, we need to work, the European Union needs to work with other regional areas to fight against isolationism. Because we know that the challenges that the world is confronted today are not solved. The answers are not inside the European Union, are all around the world. It's why the European Union needs to act against isolationism and needs to act promoting dialogue in different premises, in different international organizations. And I finish with the second point. It means the new spectrum in the European Parliament. When we look to the elections yesterday in Sweden, I'm happy because the Social Democrat Party was the first one, but with the lowest results, first of all, and with the SD, the populist party, the extreme right-wing party, with 17% of the votes. It means 5 or 6% more than in last elections. But to fight populism, we need to understand populism. In my point of view, the populists, they can mobilize people who don't feel represented in the mainstream parties. It means people who find isolated in the society. We can say that they were not beneficiaries of globalization. They are not they don't feel beneficiaries of European policies. And they try to find something different And something different is populism, because populist leaders, they know exactly which message they need to use to mobilize people. And our first issue, our first challenging for the next European elections, first one is the turnout, to have a better turnout. The second is fight populism. Because we need... We have the challenging to have a different parliament. When we look today to the parliament, okay, there are already populist parties on right, on extreme right, in the European Parliament. But when we look to the results, to member states, one by one, in national elections, we have the risk to have a different spectrum in the next European Parliament. And we need to have clear message. For example, when I think that Orbán is still member of the EPP, it's not my political family, but it's a democratic family, how they can accept Orbán, for example. So we need to clarify democracy, liberty, you need to fight populism. Thank you very much. I finish. I'm sorry because I use a bit more than 10 minutes. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your speech. I think it's truly interesting to have a national perspective on how the next European elections are going to play out. And of course, we will be paying attention and we will be working during the year and promoting the European elections. We will have in the program a moment where the European Parliament Information Office is going to come here and talk about the elections a bit further and explain their campaigns. And so you will have a lot of time to think about European elections and how you can also get involved from this moment onwards to improve the turnout on each of your countries. So thank you once again for coming, for supporting us from the beginning. Okay, so we are waiting for the minister to arrive. He has left the ministry about half an hour ago, so he should be almost here. And so there's a small time frame to wait for everyone to arrive. Thank you so much for being patient and listening. I hope it was an interesting opening ceremony. If you need anything, the badges, all of that, come to me. Bathrooms, if you wish, now is a good moment to go. Out of the room, to the right, you will find the signs there. Thank you so much. Okay, for smoking. All the smokers. So, remember the stairs we took up here? Okay. When you go down, instead of going left to the lobby, you go right to the garden. Okay? You'll see it straight away.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Please get on your seats. We are about to start. Okay, so while we're waiting for everyone to arrive, in this moment, we're going to have simultaneous translation, okay? So if you don't speak Portuguese, please use this. It is already on your seats. You have there the channels you can use. So it's 01 for Portuguese and 02 for English. So please warn me if you have translation.
I don't know if the translation booth is now ready. Yes, it's ready. So let me know if you understand English or can you hear English now in your headphones?
Okay, let me find some.
You can take this one.
Yeah, you can take, there are four here at the table. You can take them. Quem já tem headset?
Can you hear those who have the headsets? Can you hear the English version? So it's working, I think. If any problem with translation, just show your hand and we'll try to manage, see what the problem is. So just a few more seconds until everyone is in the room.
Please find your seats, everyone. Portanto, eu penso que a sala já está mais ou menos composta. Miguel?
I think the room is ready now, yes.
Miguel, está aqui um headset na mesa que não vai ser usado.
There's a headset here on the table.
Okay, obrigada. So, does everyone that needs translation have a headset? Okay, we're missing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Portanto, precisamos de 6.
6 more headsets.
Portanto, participantes portugueses que tenham headsets, se puderem disponibilizar.
So, two more headsets over there.
Pronto, portanto, estão todos. Does everyone have Alessia? Okay, good. Então, bom dia a todos. Vamos começar.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. It's a very special moment. We have the major figures of the Portuguese society represented here. I'd like to introduce Ana Paula Zacarias, Secretary of State for European Matters. Dr. Vieira da Silva is the Minister of Labor, Solidarity and Social Security, and Dr. Martins, the Director of the Misericordia of Lisbon. So as I ask Secretary of State Zacarias to start presentation. We are in the House of the Portuguese Democracy, therefore we're going to speak Portuguese. Members of Parliament, Madam Margarida Marques, Mr. Minister Vieira da Silva, Director of the Misericórdia, dear Claudia of Beta Portugal, to get started, three initial recognitions. First to the Portuguese Parliament for welcoming this meeting with the citizens of Portugal in Europe. And secondly, I'd like to recognize PETA for the interest in participating in this initiative. And in third place, a very special thanks to the Minister and the Director of the Misericordia of Lisbon for their availability to talk about the pillar of the social rights. This is the 27th meeting with the citizens. This is an initiative of the Portuguese government in the setting of the consultation with citizens that the European Union is developing until the end of the year 2018. The initiative in Portugal is coordinated by the Secretary of State of the European Matters in partnership with the European Commission through its representation in Portugal and together with many other entities, municipalities, schools, universities, many civil society organizations. And the meetings and the encounters take place in many areas, different areas of the country and in the islands. So the idea is to stimulate knowledge so people will participate more in the elections for the European Parliament that will take place in Portugal in May 2019. These meetings started in Cascais. And we held meetings on very different topics, agriculture, about the Brexit, cohesion policy, and youth policies at Figueira da Foz and Porto on scientific research, Viana do Castelo on cultural heritage, and the next ones, or the coming ones, will take place in Lourdes at the Refugees Welcoming Center and Porto on cooperation for the development in Africa, and in Almeria with the network of the senior universities. And why these meetings are important? Well, they are a complement of the work developed by the European Commission in Portugal and throughout Europe, because what we back in 1957 called EEC and then later on European Union, all that is a political project and is an attempt of building peace in Europe, putting together countries that are now abiding by the rule of law and the idea of well-being and the market economy idea. And this building, this political building, is a success and of construction and resolving, sorting out crises. Today we are faced with what some people call the polycrisis, demanding deep responses at the European level. And we see and encounter many citizens and organizations that question the status quo of the European construction. Many of these crises, the economic and financial crisis, the immigration crisis, terrorism, the Brexit crisis, all that, all those are being sorted out. But there is, anyway, some waves that are used by someone, some people to surf. And we see these situations in many European countries, and where we end up finding answers and responses that are not always the ones that we wish to have. And they see the European project as an elitist or far away from the citizens. So we must make an effort to bring the citizens back to Europe and explain them and talk to them and debate and find solutions, new solutions that at large extent you young people may find. That is the debate that we want to conduct today here on the matter of European pillar of social rights. We're going to talk about inclusion, the rights of the workers, and we're going to talk about the 20 principles that are in the Declaration of Gothenburg, approved in November 2017. And we're going to speak about the future of work, of labor. We're going to talk about inclusion and gender in the work, at the working place. It's important to do this debate because it has to do with our daily life. It has to do with our future. Therefore, please ask all the questions that you may have. We have two fantastic entities here at the table that you can question here. And this possibility of dialogue is not always there, so make use of it. So present and submit your questions to the Minister of Labor, Solidarity and Social Security and to the head of the Misericordia. It's a charity that is very relevant in the Portuguese history. So visit our website, Encounters with the Citizens. You may find a great deal of information there, and what comes out from this will be on a report with your questions, your suggestions especially, and it will be part of the national report that we'll submit in Brussels, and then that will serve for consultation and work with heads of governments and governments of the European Union. That are the entities that are going to receive that report. So participate. To me, this is a great pleasure to be here, and Europe is all yours. Without young people, it won't work. So we need you. We need your ideas. So think out of the box and find the ways, the path in this area and in social area. The floor goes to the Minister of Labor and Social Solidarity.
Muito bom dia a todas e a todos. Eu, para poupar tempo, subscrevo as saudações a todos os que estão presentes neste encontro. E aos que vieram de fora, desejo as melhores boas-vindas e a melhor experiência possível deste encontro. O tema que me foi colocado é um tema muito oportuno e muito atual para os países e para os cidadãos da União Europeia. O tema é o Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais. O que é o Pilar? Já foi dito, o Pilar resulta de uma iniciativa da Comissão Europeia, mas principalmente de um acordo ao mais alto nível, celebrado em 17 de novembro do ano passado, 2017, em na Suécia, em Gotemburgo, e que reuniu as três grandes instituições responsáveis pela condução da política na União Europeia: a Comissão Europeia, o Conselho Europeu, ou seja, o Conselho dos Primeiros-Ministros e Chefes de Estado, e o Parlamento Europeu. Portanto, as três instâncias determinantes, há outras, mas as três instâncias determinantes em matéria de condução da política europeia, subscreveram um documento a que chamaram o Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais. Porque é que foi importante esta assinatura? Por muitas razões. Eu destacaria duas. Esta cimeira de Gotemburgo foi a primeira cimeira sobre assuntos sociais que se realizou na Europa desde 1997. A anterior tinha sido no Luxemburgo, onde tinha sido aprovada uma coisa chamada a Estratégia Europeia de Emprego. Portanto, foi preciso 20 anos para que a Europa, ao mais alto nível, se reencontrasse para tomar decisões e para debater as questões do emprego e as questões sociais. Isso é uma prova da importância deste momento. A outra é porque esta decisão de criar o Pilar dos Direitos Sociais correspondeu para muitos, para a maioria dos responsáveis políticos europeus, ao reconhecimento de uma realidade dura, que é a realidade de estarmos a viver, ou pelo menos estávamos a viver, espero que tenha mudado um pouco para melhor, um processo de afastamento dos cidadãos europeus do projeto político da Europa unida através da sua união, da sua união política, económica e social. Havia a consciência, e continua a existir, que correntes, movimentos, sensibilidades que desvalorizam a construção europeia estavam a ganhar peso, ou estão a ganhar peso, na Europa. E se o estão, em grande medida, é porque a ligação entre o projeto europeu e os cidadãos não está a funcionar da melhor forma. E o plano onde essa dimensão é mais relevante é o plano social. É no plano do emprego, das condições de vida, do bem-estar, das perspectivas de futuro, que se constrói ou não se constrói uma relação positiva e ativa entre as mulheres e os homens deste continente e o projeto político da União Europeia. Por isso mesmo, o Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais é tão importante, porque ele representou uma renovação do compromisso com as questões sociais e porque ele representou uma tentativa de resposta, que tem que ser concretizada no tempo, já falarei disto, a um afastamento que verificamos existir entre os cidadãos e a Europa. Como é que foi concebido o Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais? Foi concebido como um conjunto amplo de áreas que procuram precisamente fazer isso, aproximar os cidadãos da Europa e construir políticas mais coesas do ponto de vista europeu. O texto da proclamação do Pilar Europeu dos Direitos Sociais assenta em 20 princípios. 20 princípios que são chave e que visam garantir um funcionamento mais justo e eficaz, quer dos mercados de trabalho, quer das políticas de proteção social e de promoção social. Eles estão, e agora entrando numa fase mais explicativa da natureza do Pilar, eles estão organizados em três grandes áreas. A primeira é o seu primeiro capítulo, corresponde ao objetivo de lutar pela igualdade de oportunidades e acesso ao mercado de trabalho. E entrega depois uma parte, 4 dos tais 20 princípios. Portanto, o primeiro capítulo tem a ver com igualdade de oportunidades de acesso ao trabalho. Tem depois um princípio de promoção da educação, da formação e da aprendizagem ao longo da vida, da igualdade de género, onde a Europa tem ainda um longo caminho, espero que não seja longo, mas um importante caminho a percorrer, da igualdade de oportunidades para todos, não importa as suas características, uma garantia de cidadania no acesso ao trabalho e no apoio ativo às políticas criadoras de oportunidades de emprego. Portanto, o primeiro capítulo é voltado para um dos problemas mais importantes da Europa de hoje, que tem a ver com o afastamento do mercado de trabalho de milhões de cidadãos. É claro que melhorámos muito nos últimos anos, mas ainda, os valores ainda são muitos negativos e atingem particularmente os jovens, onde registamos taxas de níveis de afastamento do mercado de trabalho que ainda não estão ao nível daquilo que existia antes das crises económicas que vivemos desde o final da primeira década deste século. O segundo capítulo, a segunda parte do pilar, tem a ver com condições de trabalho justo e integra também um conjunto de princípios. Um primeiro tem a ver com um emprego seguro e adaptável. Para quem vive na Europa, em particular alguns países, entre os quais Portugal, sabe bem que os problemas do mercado de trabalho não são apenas o desemprego. São também, muitas vezes, a existência excessiva de empregos instáveis, nomeadamente empregos precários, empregos de curta duração, com poucas condições de segurança, com poucas condições de futuro. Portanto, este é um dos pontos fundamentais. O outro princípio é a promoção de salários justos. Salários que garantam que as condições de vida não se degradem, que não diminua a qualidade de vida, que é um receio que atravessa muitas sociedades europeias. Depois um outro sobre o acesso à informação, ou seja, garantir que quem inicia uma atividade profissional tem conhecimento de todos os seus direitos e os seus deveres, naturalmente, e que essa informação é prestada atempadamente e que, nomeadamente, os direitos de proteção contra o desemprego são conhecidos. Depois, um outro princípio que tem a ver com o diálogo social e a liberdade de organização e de participação dos trabalhadores na vida económica e social. Depois há um outro princípio muito importante na sociedade moderna, que é o do equilíbrio entre a vida profissional e a vida privada, nomeadamente a vida familiar. Sabemos que, por muitas razões, nomeadamente pelas transformações tecnológicas, hoje em dia é para muitos trabalhadores difícil de perceber quando é que acaba a jornada de trabalho e acaba o direito ao descanso. Como é que se pode conciliar o direito à parentalidade, a constituir uma família, e o direito a ter um emprego que seja compatível com essa família. E depois, finalmente, neste segundo capítulo sobre condições de trabalho, um outro princípio que tem a ver com a defesa de um ambiente de trabalho são, seguro, bem adaptado e que proteja os direitos à individualidade de cada um, nomeadamente um assunto que está hoje, que é muito, muito atual, que é o direito à proteção de dados, à proteção da intimidade, da individualidade de cada um. Finalmente, o terceiro capítulo, que é o capítulo que integra os últimos princípios do pilar, que é o capítulo da proteção social e inclusão. Aí são valorizados vários princípios, eu vou apresentá-los muito rapidamente. Um deles extremamente importante, o acolhimento e apoio às crianças, principalmente às crianças mais jovens, o chamado child care, uma garantia que todas as crianças são acompanhadas, têm direito a participar no ensino, a participar no apoio à primeira infância. Depois, o direito à proteção social todo ao longo da vida, ou ao longo de toda a vida. O direito à proteção no desemprego. O direito, e este é um ponto sempre muito polémico, à existência de um mínimo de rendimento que garanta uma existência digna a todos os cidadãos. A proteção da velhice, os cuidados com a saúde, a inclusão das pessoas com deficiência, o desenvolvimento de uma rede de cuidados de longa duração, ou seja, para aqueles que, tendo atingido níveis de perda de autonomia, necessitam do apoio de outros, nomeadamente da comunidade, a habitação e a assistência para os sem-abrigo, um problema que voltou a crescer na Europa na sequência das crises, e finalmente o acesso aos serviços essenciais. Educação, saúde, habitação, todos os serviços são considerados essenciais. Estes são os princípios que foram aprovados pelo tal Cimeira dos três poderes da União Europeia e que constituíram, a partir do ano passado, uma carta fundamental, uma nova carta fundamental para as políticas europeias. Obviamente que sabemos que é um pilar de difícil concretização. A sua aprovação não garante que todos estes direitos se transformem imediatamente em realidade. Até porque muitas destas áreas, quase todas elas, são da responsabilidade dos Estados-membros da União Europeia. São responsabilidade, correspondem a responsabilidade nacional. E aqui entramos numa zona crítica e numa zona de muitas críticas à União Europeia. Se existem regras europeias no plano financeiro, no plano económico, no plano da liberdade de circulação das mercadorias, no plano, ao fim e ao cabo, do mercado e das finanças, as regras no plano social são deixadas muito mais à responsabilidade dos Estados, o que pode gerar e gera muitas vezes desigualdades significativas. Por isso mesmo, a concretização deste pilar exige a mobilização de todos e é até um risco, não é apenas uma coisa boa, é também um risco, porque se a União Europeia proclamar todos estes princípios e não tiver capacidade de ajudar a concretizá-los, o resultado será pior. Isso foi algo que muita gente alertou. Isto não podem ser só palavras, têm que ser realidades. E começam, muitos deles, a ser realidades. Desde que foi aprovado o pilar, estão em curso vários processos legislativos na União Europeia. Muito brevemente, uma diretiva para criar regras de conciliação entre a vida profissional e a vida familiar dos pais, dos filhos e dos cuidadores. Foi já aprovada pelo Conselho Europeu, se calhar não é tão avançada, ou seja, pelos ministros e pela Comissão Europeia e agora está em diálogo com o Parlamento Europeu, que é assim que funcionam a maior parte dos processos legislativos na União Europeia, para que se tenha mais apoio aos pais quando têm filhos, mais apoio aos pais quando os filhos necessitam de um apoio especial, que haja licenças que apoiem os cuidadores. Este é um tema muito exigente, muito importante e muito difícil, mas que está, neste momento, em desenvolvimento, através da criação de uma diretiva, e, como sabem, é a forma que a União Europeia tem para criar legislação europeia aplicada a qualquer área. Uma outra, na sequência do pilar europeu, tem a ver com as condições de trabalho transparentes e previsíveis. Esta é uma questão muito importante e que, se for concretizada, está também neste momento em discussão com o Parlamento Europeu, se for concretizada, vai mudar positivamente a vida de muitos cidadãos europeus. O que é que significa isto? Significa que, em muitos casos, no primeiro dia em que uma relação de trabalho se inicia entre um empregador e um trabalhador, é obrigatório que seja fornecido ao trabalhador um conjunto alargado de informação sobre as suas condições de trabalho. E, num prazo curto, seja fornecida toda a informação. Horários de trabalho, direitos a férias, direitos à proteção. E isso seja feito através de uma declaração escrita. Esta é uma diretiva também de enorme importância. Depois, uma recomendação, é um instrumento menos poderoso que a diretiva, do Conselho, relativamente à proteção social dos trabalhadores independentes, os trabalhadores por conta própria, que é algo que eu poderia falar longamente, mas é, para não gastar mais tempo, é algo que é extremamente importante, porque existe uma percentagem muito grande e crescente de trabalhadores independentes, trabalhadores que não são trabalhadores por conta de outra. E, finalmente, e era aquele ponto que poderemos deixar depois para um debate mais aprofundado, a proposta do regulamento que cria a Autoridade Europeia de Trabalho para a União Europeia. Uma instituição que passará a ter uma atitude de vigilância sobre as condições de trabalho na União Europeia. Uma nova autoridade. Está ainda também em fase de discussão, essa ainda não chegou à fase de conciliação entre as várias organizações europeias, mas ela prende-se principalmente com uma realidade. Para aqueles que aqui estão, que são cidadãos de Estados da União Europeia, sabem que existe uma espécie de um outro Estado, para além daqueles que conhecem, que são os 17 milhões de pessoas, cidadãos, que, sendo originários de um país, vivem e trabalham ou estudam num outro país da União Europeia. 17 milhões. Duplicou em 10 anos esse número. E muitas vezes esse movimento de trabalhadores, de estudantes ou de outras pessoas, mas particularmente trabalhadores, é feito através de mecanismos que não garantem os direitos e a dignidade das pessoas. E é para isso que foi criada esta, ou está a ser criada esta autoridade, para poder promover a colaboração entre os países. Há aqui muita gente que vive em países onde existem os chamados trabalhadores em Portugal, isso não tem muito significado, pelas nossas razões geográficas, mas que existe a realidade dos trabalhadores transfronteiriços, aqueles que vivem num país e todos os dias se deslocam a outro país para trabalhar. Bom, todas essas realidades exigem que a proteção das pessoas seja feita com eficácia, sem pôr em causa a liberdade económica e a liberdade de circulação, que seja possível garantir os direitos à proteção social, ao trabalho, à dignidade de todos aqueles que se movimentam na União Europeia. É para isso que vai ser criada a Autoridade Europeia dos Direitos Sociais. E é por isso que ela é uma parte do pilar europeu dos direitos sociais e é por isso que nós a torcemos aqui como um dos pontos para poder ser conhecido, aprofundado e discutido por todos vós. Muito obrigado.
A noite foi longa ontem.
It was a long night yesterday, eh? How many of you are at work now? Anyone works here, have a job? Yeah, 3, 4, 6. Many of you are now having a job. And I think it's interesting to pose questions that have to do with your jobs and the difficulties that you have encountered in searching or looking for jobs. I know that some of you are not from the European Union. So how could you adapt, or how can you use these aspects and transport them to other reality? Does that make sense? How could that be? So think of those questions, those matters, when you pose your questions. Now I give the floor to the provedor, or the purveyor of the Santa Casa of Misericordia, the charity, the oldest charity in Portugal. What is that, and what do you do? Yes, Minister Claudius, Mrs. Claudius Silva, Secretary of State. Before I try to explain what this is all about, this Santa Casa, because it's a very complex thing. But I'd like, before that, I'd like to thank for the invitation to be with here with you and benefit from what comes out of this, and I'll give my modest contribution that comes out of our work at the Santa Casa in Lisbon and in Portugal, of what we call this, the third sector, the social economy. The Santa Casa of Lisbon celebrates this year 2018, 520 years of existence. It's the oldest organization of the Portuguese society, and since its beginning, it dedicates to the humanitarian support and health and so on. So it is developing its activities. So it's a private organization of public interest, and it relies on the resources that come from the exploration of the social games and so on. So it's an organization by its dimension and presence in Portuguese society, has the knowledge, a very wide knowledge of the Portuguese society, and has a high responsibility to create and bring about new challenges and new works, lines of work. I'm not going to be very long, but I'd like to say that the Santa Casa of Misericordia, it's a different name to translate to other languages, this charity, but it's very present and impregnated in the Portuguese society. It's fundamental in the support to those who are the most needy in the Portuguese society, and it introduces also a large dynamic force drive through the social games. And that is a very important contribution. And in relation to that, because all that is about the pillar and this, what the idea that we have of this is that the civil society and all the citizens in a more or less organized way has a right of participation here, and also has a duty and a responsibility to be an active part of these processes. And regarding the European pillar of the social rights, some claim this is the last opportunity for a social Europe. Juncker had mentioned that, and meaning an ambition that he characterized the top the top would be the social Europe able to respond and provide an answer, adequate answer to the rights of the citizens. So this mission requires requires, besides this, from our viewpoint, a huge mobilization of from the citizens, and the social rights is the best reason to be active. If we don't manage and to mobilize the citizens, if we don't do that, and if we don't mobilize the citizens around these topics that regard their lives and their dimensions, so very, it's going to be very difficult to mobilize the citizens to in Europe that is far from all these chapters or aspects. So this is a unique opportunity. And it's an opportunity to have more effective rights, and so we cannot waste that opportunity. And we, European citizens and members of our organizations, of the civil society organizations, and we all hold responsibilities. So there is a very long way to progress. And so there's a study that, based on a set of indicators and we see that the most advanced country in the scale of 1 to 10 has 7.9 points, and the lowest is 3.7. So there is a tremendous gap here in regarding the social wellness. So, and we think that the pillar can be a very powerful tool. And so it's, if you want this pillar to be a success, it's in your hands. So that's why this mobilization on an individual and collective basis is very important. So we lead this and take this forward to meet the ambition of this pillar. Because if we just remain in the field of soft law, this is the field that, or the domain that is the traditional domain in the social policies, then it's going to be very difficult to fulfill this ambition. The suggestions are more important here today than my words. But I would say that we are faced here with the first step in the sense of materializing these rights. And there is a factor that is very relevant, is that the Commission wants to use a scoreboard that comes in as an access to the pillar as a permanent tool for the definition of indicators that will enable us to follow up of the pillar. If we just stay in the recommendations, then we're not going to go very far. We must be more daring and accompany the original ambition of this pillar. We must be able to not only start with a set of legislative initiatives, and also we must bet on the intervention of the citizens and of the organized civil society. And then these 20 principles then will influence the contents of future policies and legislation. So this is a unique opportunity to give a thrust to Europe and then make citizens closer together and contribute to the Europe of citizens. So this is a very important factor. And then again, once again, I'd like to thank you for the invitation and for the opportunity to debate with you. Thank you very much.
Portanto, agora o palco é...
Now the floor is yours. Now it is up to you to ask questions. As was mentioned, we are here discussing the social pillar, and this is, of course, one of the main directives which are in this ambit. So this afternoon you won't be debating this. Any questions that you have now? These are the best people we have to answer, people who are on the council and who are producing these policies and are familiar with the reality of the issues. So does anybody want to ask? Who is going to be the first brave person? Gary? No, Gary?
No, none. Sorry, this is my first time using the microphone system, so just testing it out. I thought those contributions were very interesting, and I think particularly because of the position...
Sorry, can you just say your name and your country?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear.
Gary Patterson, and I'm from Scotland in the UK. I just wanted to say that I thought that those presentations were really interesting, both from the panellists here just now and the speaker from earlier. I think the perspective from Portugal is one which seems to be very much from a left-wing perspective, and perhaps that's not the case within the council at large. So I just wondered if you could maybe explain how the position in Portugal differs perhaps from other governments within the EU, and what work you have taken as a country to advance a more progressive approach within the social pillar.
Thank you very much. It's a very good question.
Something which the history of the European Union teaches us is that if the position of the state member states, of the different member states, is shaped often by the political orientations of its country, of the governments and parliaments, that is not the only explanation for the differences between countries. And when we talk about the European social rights pillar, we can find a great enthusiasm on this regarding this pillar in countries which have a more center-left or in countries which have a center-right orientation. Social Europe, in my opinion, is not the monopoly of one only political family, of none of them. Sometimes the differences are more important. More important are the historical and traditions than the traditions of organizational society of the countries than the differences of political orientation of the governments of those countries. For example, in the domains in which you're going to speak, the protection of workers in a condition who are in a condition of mobility, to guarantee them a guarantee of equality, we find countries with different political orientations. Having said this, I think this is true. The social Europe is not a monopoly of any political force. Nowadays, I can say this, this is my opinion, that according to some political currents, which are more on the right, there may be a position of defending a nationalist policy which is not compatible, doesn't fit with an instrument such as the European pillar. Some political forces, some recent ones, see Europe as only an economic space, freedom of circulation, of economic circulation, and have more resistance to the social component. But this was never an area in which Europe has been a monolith. It's always something that has been constructed in a plural way. We think that within this plural construction there is room to reinforce the social dimension, not only because that corresponds to our values, our doctrinal values or ideological values, but because we think the perception of the weakness, of the social weakness of Europe, which has become an argument against the European project, and therefore, I'm part of the social democratic family in Europe, but I think that it is not just this family that thinks that we must have a social model where all fit. There will always be differences, of course, in as a result of the political orientations of the 27 or 28 members of the Union. What we have to do is to construct a project which is centered upon the citizens who have preoccupations and ambitions. Thank you. Thank you for the question, which is very important, especially coming from Scotland.
I haven't stepped into my role in the simulation as a Minister of France yet, so I allow myself to ask a question as a Danish citizen. I believe that Denmark and the Danish government has failed hardly on handling or tackling the refugee crisis. But however, it has resulted in some consequences that I don't believe that Denmark is the only country in the EU that is facing. The challenge is that some of the asylum seekers who apply for asylum in this country, while their cases are under treatment, which can take years because we are in this specific or certain situation, it results in these people doing undeclared work. So they somehow become a part of the labor market in the member states. But their rights are, of course, not, protected, because first of all, they are not in the country on a legal basis. They are not allowed to work. But however they do it, this situation with the consequences that the refugee crisis has caused on the labor market, is that something that has been thought into these 20 principles, or is that a situation that has not really been thought of? Thank you.
That's a very good, interesting question. Coming back to the issue of inequality, it is clear that societies that have a huge degree of inequality are societies that are fractured. And these societies have more difficulty in development. And we can see this around the world. So fighting inequality is somehow a precondition for development. And this was a very clear trend, and it has been a clear trend in the European Union, but the problem is that at a certain moment with the crisis, the financial economic crisis, these inequalities became bigger. So somehow, when we talk about the future of Europe, we have to give it more and more attention to this issue. Not to open this crater, not to open this gap, and on the contrary, try to bring everybody together. So how does this interact, and how does the issue of labor and social rights interact with migration. So this is a fundamental issue in our society nowadays. Though what we call the migration crisis, as you know, is being solved, we can discuss, is it being solved the right way or the wrong way anyway, but it's being solved. In 2015, we had in a month 1 million people getting into Europe. Nowadays, this value came down to less than 90%. It's less than 10% of this value. So the situation is being solved, but yet there is the perception they are here. They're going to take my job. They're going to take our identity, the ways they do not respect the ways we do things. And yet, this is not true. It's a perception. So in the basis of this perception, because people come, people are looking for jobs. Many of these jobs that they are looking for are jobs that people in our own societies don't want to do anymore. Probably the wages are less. And at the same time, we have to do a big effort in social terms to integrate these people, not to put them in ghettos, not to make them, not to be isolated. There is a huge effort that we need to do in terms of integration. And this goes for the social rights. If they come, if they stay for a long period, or if they stay permanently, they have to have their own rights. And we need to be very clear about that, that they come in and as soon as possible they will become citizens, or they want to go back to their own countries, but their rights have to be assured. And we have to be very careful with the rights for labor. We cannot allow that these people come and they use this cheap labor. We have to make sure that every single worker is respected and has their wages according to what they produce, to what they do, and there are no discrepancies between the wages of a refugee or a migrant and one of our citizens. So here comes another very important question, which is regulated migration. We need to have a system of regulated migration so that we can have the people we need in the societies that we are, that are getting older and older. For the first time ever, we have more people above 60 years old than below 65 years old. So we are becoming very old societies. We need young people, we need new people. And these people come with different ideas. And this is Europe. This is the world. The world has been done like this. So it is a very important issue. But I think maybe the minister wants to... Sr. Ministro, quer juntar alguma questão? Não? A Santa Casa da Misericórdia também trabalha com migrantes?
A Santa Casa trabalha com migrantes, particularmente na região...
Santa Casa works with migrant workers in the area of Lisbon, and the question you've raised is very relevant, particularly for those who are requesting an asylum. Rather than an economic migration, the asylum seekers have a long process before them to regularize their situation until a decision is taken. The decision may be negative, it may be positive. Some people don't get accepted. And the question is, what kind of framework can we arrange in terms of profession, of social conditions, of education, of training? And in some circumstances, this means a very great pressure. And your question is about the organizations which have responsibilities in this area. A central issue nowadays in Portugal is, and we have been able to handle it, not perhaps the ideal response, but because in European terms, we don't have yet the total engagement and understanding of our role in supporting these citizens. I agree entirely with you when you say there is a responsibility of those who take in migrants and make sure that these people are integrated completely. And this has to be on a professional level, not only a matter of citizenship, but of family integration, social integration. And we try and do that in Lisbon and with ever greater intensity, but always from the viewpoint that this responsibility to lead with these people as citizens who are coming to Portugal looking for a better life, we have the duty to receive them well and to define the conditions, if they wish, under which they may organize their lives in Portugal.
Okay, so we'll take three questions at a time. Okay, so Emma, Tiago, Celso.
Hi, my name is Emma. I'm French. I come from a country where 11 million people thought Marine Le Pen would be a good president back in 2017. So I'm extremely worried as to the upcoming European elections in May of 2019. I think there's a very, very probable risk that we will end up with a Eurosceptic majority in the EP. And I wanted to know what consequences that would have on the social pillar, meaning would that basically torpedo the proposal or what would happen to it? Thank you.
Sou Celso Funhas, sou português, e a minha questão é...
Portuguese. Now, if you don't have a dual standard regarding the social matters in the European Union, and at the same time that we are reinforcing our commitment with a social pillar, it's the austerity measures that the European Union have supported did not create the well-being of the workers. All that must be must regard that the European people, not the group. Maybe we have here a dual standard. It's social support just for some. That's my question. I'm Portuguese from Porto, and my question. As the minister said a while ago, we had the directive reinforced by the approval of the 20 social pillars, and one of the things was gender equality and non-discrimination in terms of labor. So I'd like to know what is being done in Portugal and what is missing to achieve or attain these objectives, and where... What is the panorama in the other countries in Europe in the transposition of these priorities? For...
Muito obrigado pelas questões.
Thank you for the questions. Now, starting with the first question from our French friend. Obviously that the political advance of forces that have a more hostile position towards the European project, some Eurosceptical or anti-European, that is a serious problem. And it would be irresponsible to forget that or ignore that. But I think that the reality of the policies and of the social models sometimes have a very strong reality that conditions many of the political options in the wake of the European pillar, the European Union has approved a social score board with 12 indicators and that help us to measure the impact of the policies and the situation in the different countries. Reading that is a very interesting experience to understand what the European Union is all about and what conditions the options of their government. One indicator is the impact of public policies in reducing poverty. The five countries that have higher more resources directed to reducing policies, poverty of are Ireland, Finland, Denmark, Holland, and Austria. Some of these countries, not all, have today in their government political forces that are not too enthusiastic about Europe. Honestly, I don't believe that countries have, not all, but or at least, I don't believe that the political changes will change this. The importance of the public policies in reducing inequalities, because that is a requirement that will remain in those countries. But valuing the importance of Europe as a promoter of the social rights throughout its decades of history, it's essential, and the European pillar is determining to go against those voices that I think have not a message of evaluation of the future. Regarding the contradiction that you mentioned, of course there are contradictions between different policies and also between different moments. The fact that European Union back in 2017 has approved the European pillar of the social rights is admitting that some of the inequalities were aggravated, worsened between countries. So that's awareness of the policies that had been developed for some years didn't have the impact, the expected impact. But we could have the or aspire, but to have a European Union with a great weight, about 30 or almost 30 member states, without admitting that there are differences or different perspectives among these member states. What is essential is to manage to have policies that will gather consensus and show the importance of the social dimension in those policies. The European Union, it's not only its financial dimension or economic dimension, it's also its social dimension. The the issue of gender differences, with that is not only wage differences, it's also the differences in acceding the market, the job market. One of those indicators is the difference in the access of the job market and employment rates per gender, men and women. The work that must be done is complex, a complex one. I'm not going to read now the position of each member state, but that will be surprising. Some more member states with a higher wealth level and with higher gaps, and some are less rich or poorer and are better, doing better in regarding equality. So that's why we need policies to increase the transparency of the job market. In Portugal, we have approved legislation that involves all the companies. They must have a report showing the gaps or the wage gaps and the differences, the main differences of those differences. And when they come from a discrimination, then we enter the field of illegality. Then when the authorities intervene, when they come from policies that do not promote equality, then we must stimulate the companies to correct those inequalities, although it's a demanding job and difficult.
So, three more questions. Brian, the girl in the back, Wasim.
Thank you. My name is Trajan. I come from Bulgaria. It's strange we didn't have someone from the East speaking. I would like to elaborate on what Gary and on what Soma said earlier, and to ask you as our panel, don't you think that the so-called social pillar is more like social protectionism with regards especially to proposals like the Posted Workers Directive, which in its essence was made to protect the higher income markets in the West from the competition of lower paid workers from the East? And the second thing is that I want to ask you, do you believe that it's instead of introducing new rules for the member states, the EU should start putting into practice the rules that it already has? For example, there are two very big countries that have been breaking the rules on deficits in the Eurozones for years and years and years on, and I mean France and Italy, but because they are two of the biggest member states, nobody will say anything against them. And yes, there is very big probability to have a Front National victory in the European elections with the unreformed social system in France. And the second thing is, how long will the EU continue to have two types of citizenships for the different member states? Because if you want to go to the USA, you hop on the plane and you're there. If I want to go to the USA, I have to take a big process with a visa, with application, with review, which involves money. And a good example for this is the free trade agreement that we had, negotiations that we had with Canada last year. The EU didn't include visa reciprocity with all member states, even though the European citizens are supposed to be equal. And it was only after the direct threats of veto from the Bulgarian and the Romanian government that the Union thought that this is an issue for some of the member states. What do you believe? Well, what's your opinion on that?
Bom dia, chamo Filipa Fernandes, sou de Coimbra.
I'm from Coimbra, Filipa Fernandes. I'd like, what is the importance that Portugal places to the, or gives to the importance number of homeless people in In Lisbon, for example, yesterday I encountered a gentleman that was on a hunger strike in order to draw attention from the government to the homeless people. So what measures are Portugal taking to resolve this serious problem and that these people are living?
And now? Okay, yeah. So I'm from Brussels, and in Belgium we have quite an enhanced social system. But a lot of political and economic analysis prevail that in 10 to 20 years we may have a crisis, as our current system may not be able to pay for the system as it is right now. As has been said by Ms. Zacharias, our population is growing older, and we have as well automatization of the labor force as well as a digital disruption. So my question is for all three of you. Do you believe that our social system in Europe is sustainable for the future, taking into account the fact that our population is growing older and that we have an automatization of the labor force? Thank you.
Thank you.
Perhaps I should start with the homeless people. The existence of a number, limited, even if it's a limited number, it's a social problem of great importance. But I'd like to say that in Portugal, that's not one of the regions, comparing with other countries, that we have the same size of this problem, of the seriousness. But we have, the government has approved, and it was discussed here at the parliament, a national strategy for the integration of homeless people. And it has a very wide set of measures, like food support and homes, and it's participated by NGOs largely, and then it has also some strategies that are very important. I think that the Santa Casa of Misericordia of Lisbon has a great participation, but many other entities play important roles in that field. Homeless are a very complex problem because there are very diversified causes behind that issue. It's not only the lack of social protection or of jobs. In some cases, the situations are far more complex. But we have a network of support, very strong network, and not always is possible to cover all the situations, but in the regions where this phenomenon is stronger and harsher than in the areas, metropolitan areas of Lisbon and Porto, there is also a strong network of social action to promote and serve responses to the homeless. But the most difficult response due to difficulties to materialize is the lack of lodging. And you cannot just do that, take the people out of the streets, but you must have a social work that involves many institutions and entities. The key question here.
Welfare state are regarding the trends of the demographic issues, regarding the trends of the automatization, digitalization, etc. Well, this is not a new question. Centuries ago, that societies ask it will be possible to have employment when the engines are doing most of the ancient jobs. And till now, in my opinion, always the technical and innovation and the technical progress create more jobs than those that was destroyed. It will be the same in the future. It's difficult to say. It's difficult to say. But I think it depends on politics, on policies, and in the options we want to follow in our collective choice. I think it's possible. Nowadays we are creating millions of jobs with the new economy. The problem is sometimes the site, the place, the country, the region where the jobs are destroyed is not the same, where the jobs are created. That's why we need public policies to improve the conditions, improve education, improve training, improve a new approach for the life cycle policies. For instance, understanding that now is not enough to have a good formal and initial education is not enough to assure better conditions to find a job. We need long life policies for training. I think it's possible to. We are not facing a situation where it's inevitable. That some people are in the labor market, some people live with some kind of social assistance. I think it will be a very dangerous situation. That's why I think it's there is a very interesting issue that we are discussing all around the world, is the basic income allowances. I don't think it will be the better answer for the problems we are facing. Of course, we need policies to support the people that are in disadvantage regarding the labor market or the income situation. But first of all, we need to create conditions to have jobs for the majority of people. Different jobs, perhaps, with different conditions, but always preserving the value of jobs. The ILO creates a concept that I think it's very, very important, the decent jobs. We need decent jobs with wages, with social protection, and I think it's possible to do it. It's our friend from Bulgaria puts a very interesting question. Is the social pillar some kind of protectionism? And you talk about the posting work directive. There was in Europe, as you know, large debate. And I can't say, it's impossible to say, that some perspectives for creating a more equal situation regarding wages and working conditions for the local workers and the posted workers, it's impossible to say that there isn't some kind of influence of protectionism. But the same we can say when someone defends or someone argues that it's possible to have in some labor market some worker, a man or a woman, working in sometimes terrible conditions only because they came from another European member state. That is also a kind of protectionism of the preserving low level of wages and trying to compete only with that kind of tool. So we need to find a well-balanced approach. And I think that the solution we found about the posting workers directive is that kind of solution. That's why not only, let's say, old European member states were supporting the directive. Member states from west and east and west, from north and south of Europe, have found the common solution. And that, I think, is the road we must follow in some these kind of questions. Thank you.
Purveyor of the Santa Casa. The Santa Casa has been working with homeless people for 500 years. What is your experience? My memory doesn't go that far back, but thank you very much. This issue, and the minister has already explained very clearly the nature of the problem and the way in which we try to solve it. We have in Lisbon a situation which fortunately is not growing. It's stable. A situation that we find day to day are becoming more difficult to solve because many of them have to do not only have to do with consumption but have to do with questions of mental health, which require a completely different approach. As the minister said, we are faced with a reality which is very difficult and very diverse. The causes that lead people to homelessness are not uniform, and therefore the functions, the solutions we have to find, cannot be uniform either. So this is what we've tried to do, with some success, I would say, under the, given the circumstances in which the public and private institutions have applied their efforts, the municipality of Lisbon, the parishes, and civil society institutions have managed to find solutions, although the problem is not solved. What we have is a great ambition that in the next few years there will be a serious reduction in this problem. Both the government and the President of the Republic have continually stressed this ambition and this desire. But it is true that these are not easy matters to solve. For example, we have an experiment. This is a project that even received a prize, an international prize. This is to do with what to do is housing first. We try to find homes for homeless people. There's been a great collaboration between municipalities and the government and the Ministry of Social Security and civil society,
And we are getting to know the reality much better. And from my point of view, this is really important to know exactly what we are dealing with. And we have improved a lot, although you are right to raise this. It is a situation which should not exist at all. There should be zero tolerance for a situation like this. The difficulty is that in many cases, these people only leave the life in the streets if they wish to do it, and we cannot coerce them to do so. And it's not always easy to achieve, to get them to leave their status of homeless. It is, however, at the top of our agenda in terms of social policies. I think we are reaching the end. At midday, we must end. I don't know if the minister wants to say anything further to finish.
We are always at your disposal to talk, to debate, and to create common approaches on the problem, about the problems we are facing for the future of Europe and for the future and regarding so many problems we are facing, so many challenges all around the world that your generation is, I think, able to face. Thank you very much.
So thank you for participating in this meeting with the citizens. Europe is all about you. There are no simple questions to complex situations. Be always aware of that. There are no simple questions. All the problems and challenges that we have identified here today in terms of economic development, creation of jobs, social policies, the future of work, social and integration issues, education for new jobs, it's all a very complex reality. We have to try to find solutions. You are the ones, as the minister said, that have to find these solutions in the future. We're trying to do our best our generation can do, but the future is yours at national level and at European level if we want to find European answers to all these challenges. So it's a work in progress, and here we are. We are always at your disposal to keep on talking. See the website that we have and participate. The European Union has also a site where you can give your questions, put your questions, give your suggestions on the future of Europe. That's what we are talking about, the future of Europe. Thank you.
Okay, so I'd like to thank everyone that came. It was really important for us, and I think it's valuable for the discussions we're going to have. We would like to present the speakers with a few gifts that we have, including a photograph of this moment, so that you can keep memory of Vita and MEUs. A few announcements for the participants. So the council will move first to lunch. The MEPs and the EP chairs will take a photo here in the Senate room for us to post, okay? So the council will follow João there to the restaurants, okay? Okay.